congressman of the Rocontra with Ann Atlantis District mm-hmm. of Illinois.
Yes, he is.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger.
What's up?
And we like to play this music because he's an Air Force pilot. Of course, the Top Gun was about Navy pilots, but whatever.
Doesn't matter.
But now this really applies because we had...
Don't fly fighters, but whatever.
But here's... I know, there's a lot of inconsistencies here. But but the point is that now you had a real situation with the Ruskies, you know, and a kind of a mid-air thing that's being described. Now you're a pilot, so explain this to me. This was a Russian fighter jet that made a high-speed pass approximately 5 feet away from a cruising RC-135, which is the size of a 707 aircraft.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Well, I mean, it's possible and really dangerous. You know, typically when we play these intercept games, and so I actually flew for about a year or two a KC-135, which is the same plane, different mission. I flew that in 05 and 06, and, you know, it's powerful plane, I mean, frankly, but, you know, we would practice intercepts as just part of training with the fighter wing and all that stuff. And an intercept, usually they get within, I'd say 50 feet or something like that, 100 feet, just for visual confirmation. 5 feet, I mean, if it's really 5 feet, I've got to imagine that actually there was a mistake somewhere, literally that the fighter pilot probably made a mistake, because you don't get 5 feet. I mean, even seasoned fighter pilots hate air refueling because they get, you know, within 5 feet of a big aircraft. So it is, and if that's the case, and I'm not sure if it is.
You're
but
not even.
The
air refueling off of a KC-135, which, as you just pointed out, is the same airframe as this plane, yeah. This American plane we're talking about. I mean, that boom that comes out, you got 20, 25 feet from, you know, where you're away from that aircraft. Now you're slow, yep. And slow. You're slow behind it, but that's mm-hmm. the point of it. But it's still, I mean, I can't, that it has to be a mistake or the number has to be wrong, but whatever it is, that's as close as you can get without crashing, because that fighter jet totally. Is got to be moving at 600 or 700 knots, while the bigger planes at like 300 knots. There's no way.
But and honestly, these their pilots are not that good. I mean, that would be tough for our pilots to pull off, and theirs are not that good. They don't get to fly much.
But if it's a mistake, I mean, maybe a mistake to get that close, but could it really be accidental that they flew at any distance between with the U.S.
No.
aircraft? I mean, that was saber rattling, posturing. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's show of force, and it's probably a reaction to the European Reassurance Initiative, where we have troops and buildups in Eastern Europe to protect NATO and defend the red line of Article 5. And, you know, it also could have been a reaction to what happened in Syria when a Vietnam-era relic, which is basically what the Syrian regime flies, was shot down for bombing American allies. And so, you know, they're going to, I mean, look, Russia's a powerful country, and I think that's important. They're not the United States. They're far, far inferior militarily and economically, but they're a great power. And they're getting, you know, people are realizing that despite all their bluster in Syria and Eastern Europe, they really still can't hold a candle to the United States. So they're going to lash out in any way they can, short of a shooting war, I think, because frankly, they know they're not going to win. And Vladimir Putin's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, wait till he hears that you just said about him. Look out. Oh, God. You're going to get a call from the White House.
Apology on that.
What are you doing? We're trying to get along with him. Well, what do you make of that, though? Because we had Bob Baer on yesterday. You know him, formerly of the CIA. And he said that he's been in that region for his entire CIA career. Speaks Arabic. He speaks Farsi mm-hmm. fluently. And he doesn't understand whose side we're on anymore and whose side anybody else is on, because, you know, 2 weeks ago we were actually working with we had advisors working with Iranian troops and Kurdish troops on an action in Iraq. Now we're shooting down an Iranian fighter jet. We've got the Iranians and the Russians and us are all working on another ISIS shot. And then today there is some question about al-Baghdadi, and I want to get to that in just a moment. That's the guy who runs, that's the head cleric of ISIS, and I want to get to him in just a second. Your thoughts on that. But do you understand what side everybody's on now?
It's really, really complicated, and I think our lack of action 5 years ago has way it's not our fault. It's really the fault of the actors in the region, Bashar al-Assad. But the failure of intervention and not, you know, Iraq-style intervention, but, you know, like Libya, but with a post-game this time, which, by the way, I think it's important to note, Libya, as bad as it is in far better shape than what Syria is right now. And so it's really complicated. I think, I think it started with the Obama administration and to an extent has held over into the President Trump administration, which is, you know, this idea that we have to just simply go after ISIS. And so that creates a very complicated situation. We are trying to get people on the ground to support us only against ISIS, not against the regime. You know, these folks' chief enemy is frankly the regime because they have 50 years of history between Assad and his father killing their, you know, their kids, grandkids and parents and everything else.
Right.
And so, you know, we have a very small focus. Honestly, the fight against ISIS is really small compared to the bigger problems in Syria, and it's getting very complicated. So I think what President Trump has done really well in this is he's put down red lines to say you can't drop bombs near our allies because, frankly, we have guys embedded in that, by the way. Secondly, you cannot get into these deconfliction zones. And if you do, we're going to bomb. You know, we're not going to go on TV and brag about it. We're not going to do more than publicize it through the traditional press release route. But here are red lines. We will protect our people. And I think it's kind of that silent strength that actually is, I think that sends a stronger message to Russia than any, frankly, UN sanction or anything like that can.
Do you think the Russians got al-Baghdadi? There's some talk of that. And now U.S., it was reported earlier today, Fox News reported, that the chief cleric of ISIS, not al-Baghdadi, who's the head of ISIS, he's the bin Laden for ISIS, if you will, but the chief cleric and an al-Baghdadi confidant was killed by U.S. Forces. Is that confirmable?
That's what I've heard. I don't have that from any other channel than what you've heard. And, you know, this is good. Every time we kill a leader, they talk about the head of the snake, kind of the hydra. You cut a head off, a new one grows. True. But you get dumber people, frankly, that take over these positions because, you know, now you have to have somebody that was way down the food chain taking over. In terms of al-Baghdadi, we don't know. I would pour cold water on, I think, that excitement because the Russians claim they did it and killed 300 ISIS members in the middle of Raqqa. I think we would have known if 300 ISIS members were killed in the middle of Raqqa, to include al-Baghdadi. And typically ISIS puts out press statements when some of their leadership is killed because it's a way to honor them. It's kind of an obituary, if you will, and they use it to drive more recruitment. And ISIS hasn't said a word. Now, al-Baghdadi is very different than other leaders. I hope he's dead, and I'll give Russians credit for it, even though only about 5% of their airstrikes are focused on ISIS anyway. But I'd pour cold water on that now. I just don't think it's overly credible.
Congressman, can I ask you about your Facebook post? Because it seemed like a very passionate call to try to get encourage people to rise above the fray of this vitriol and restore civility. And you posted some, I think they were Facebook or Twitter comments that people sent to you right after the Alexandria shooting. Things like, I wish you were on the second base, and just horrible, horrible things. And it just it feels as if, you know, you're calling for something that I think we'd all like to see in Washington for sure. And what you received there as a result, or, you know, because of your talk about how that felt to get all those messages and where do you think we are here?
Well, I have thick skin and I didn't put this out as a woe is me, but I did put it out because I think, you know, it's the old idea of to expose darkness, you have to bring light. And I think bringing light to, it's not just what people have posted prior. I wanted to stick with things that people said during and after the Scalise shooting, and things like, I wish you were on second base, things like, you know, somebody was right to murder Abraham Lincoln. I mean, there, if you, and that's a taste, that's a small taste.
Oh, they're terrible, what you posted.
And I've had colleagues send me stuff saying they're going to show up at the house and, you know, go after their kids. And I think to expose the darkness in people's hearts, not everybody, but some people's hearts and what they're willing to put on Facebook, I think you have to put it out there for light. I decided to cover the names up, but I was pretty close to leaving the names on there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
And again, it's not so people can have sympathy for me. I know what I'm doing. But it's a call to action to people and to myself. I've said, you know, where I've made mistakes, I want to try to fix those, even though I'm a flawed human being. But we've got to have passionate, heated arguments. That's great. That's what we're supposed to do out here. But, you know, threatening people with violence and wishing that I was on second base or wishing that my good friend's, you know, 12-year-old was somewhere so you could go after them. I mean, these are the kind of messages that are being sent. And we have to bring light to that. People have to see that that's what's out there, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's an important point, too, to call out those people for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they are
trolls.
They're very loud. They're very obviously, you know, the veneer of any kind of civilization has been ripped away here. in some ways by social media, in some ways by the troll behavior of some on social media. And you got, you know, varying degrees of it. And obviously this is the worst of it, where you're making death threats.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I think there's great comments people put too.
But I got to tell you something. The thing is that we need to instill a sense of civility in this, and we need, and to your point in your Facebook post, but I think it's also important that the leaders of this country, and that means members of the House of Representatives and Congress and the President of the United States and all, you know, need to behave in a civil way with each other. And that is the part that gets me. I mean, I know that the president wants to do this for politics because he's taking a cue. He's new to this, as his own people like to say. And he's taking a cue by what some of the worst actors in politics have been. They weren't successful with it, but he was. So he figures it must work. And he needs to make a change in his tone, his use of social media, because there's decorum and respect for the office. Everyone has to have it. Now, the citizens out there and the I don't even know how to describe these people who put these posts up, or that guy last week who went and, you know, tried to assassinate two dozen members of Congress. You know, there aren't words that I can even use to describe how much I despise that these people who are doing these kinds of things. But in the meantime, we do need to raise the rhetoric so that the argument cannot be made. Well, you see, everybody's doing it now.
Yeah.
And that's just not right.
And here's the point. So let's say, you know, the rhetoric on the left is heated, so the right gets heated, then the left gets more heated, then the right gets more heated. At no point is it going to end where one of the sides says, you know what, you're right, because you got so heated that I believe you're right. This, like, what's the end game here? And the end game is worse and worse and worse. And so I say this to my friends on the right and my friends on the left, is both sides are to blame here. And if you think only the other side's to blame, you're especially to blame by not recognizing it on your own side. We all have something in this. We can debate, but the level of hate, calling people bad people, I don't know many or any bad people in politics. I know people I disagree with, though.
I'll tell you one thing. I just want to go back to my fourth grade gym teacher.
What did your fourth grade gym teacher
I don't
say?
Know who started this, but I'm ending it.
That's right.
Finishing right now.
And then I remember being dangled by my hair over the free throw line. That's all I recall at that moment. All right. Oh, my God. Does that work? Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Congressman. Appreciate your time,
thanks,
as always.
You bet.
There he
thanks,
goes.
Guys. Take care.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Violetta Powder Medic, WGN Turf Trouble Spots.